opportunity for me to be with you tonight. Is this too loud? Is it too high up? Okay. Ah, that may make a difference. Well, I didn't get to greet everybody as you came in tonight, but I hope to as you leave after the service is over, if you still want to talk to me then. I'm kind of like the grandparents that took their little grandson to the air show. Y'all seen air shows in Huntsville and different places. These grandparents took their three-year-old grandson, and they got there, and of course, there are all kinds of planes in the air doing stunts, and this little boy wants to go see an F-18 fighter jet that's sitting right on the runway, on the tarmac. So they take him over to the plane, and there's a ramp built up to the cockpit, and on the other side of the cockpit, there is a tour guide to tell all about the airplane. So they get there, and the tour guide says, bring your grandson up here. Set him right down here in the pilot's seat, just like a real pilot. Then the tour guide goes into his description. He says, now this screen in front of your son's grandson's face, that's his radar screen. Tells about every airplane in the sky around him, in front of him, behind him, above him, on either side, and below him. And below that is the trigger for the machine gun. Next to that is the trigger for the cannon. On the other side of that's the release for the missiles. And the little boy said, Grandma, you got a quarter? Well, I know that the congregation here is very dedicated to saving souls around the world. You've been so wonderful to help us with the India work. And Robert has, of course, Robert and Faye both have given so much of their lives and time to see the gospel spread in India. And we just appreciate you so much. And we look forward to Robert and Faye getting back to India to help us with the work. The work is, folks, it is literally exploding. The number of people obeying the gospel and their friends and neighbors and relatives that want us to come and teach them, just the numbers just keep expanding. Last year, the Lord blessed us with over 500,000 baptisms in India. I guess you've already announced that. You haven't announced that. You're not ashamed of the work in India. Well, this year, Lord willing, we're already at 375,000 baptisms. If everything continues, and please pray that it does, if everything continues the way it is now, we'll probably go over the 500,000 baptisms mark again this year. So the Lord's really blessing us. But it all started 30-something years ago. It's just, you know, as the years go by and more people are converted and they start teaching their neighbors and friends, it just keeps growing. One of the greatest growth factors has been lately the number of denominational workers. And if I say denominational preachers, you think of a guy with a big degree, living in a nice house with a big salary and working with a big denominational church. Well, there's some of that in India, and we see some of those kind of people. But many of the people that we work with are denominational workers. You could call them denominational preachers because that's what they want to be. But they are busy working with two or three little congregations. They meet in their home, and then they go down the road 5 or 10 miles and meet later in the day with another group and preach to them. And they're very dedicated, have very little training. And when we announce that we're going to have denominational preacher seminars, everybody's welcome to come free of charge, then they come out in large numbers. Our largest crowd on this trip that I just finished was over 500 in the city of Rajahmundry. And so Robert knows what I'm talking about. And when we completed 7 different seminars on this last trip, we had over 200 of these denominational workers, denominational preachers that were baptized into Christ, and a lot more that were going home shaking their heads saying, I never heard anything like this before. I'm going to check it out. Many of them are still studying with our preachers. We have a network of preachers that continues to work with these men, the ones who are converted and the ones who are not yet converted. So please continue to pray for us. I made 2 trips to India this year. And Lord willing, middle of October or so, I'll be going for another trip, my 3rd for the year. Thanks to Robert having to stay home. So, but we're We understand Robert's position, and we support him 100%, but we are anxious to have him back in harness anytime we can to help us with the work. Well, folks, if I were going to be a movie maker, I think a movie I would make would be about Solomon and Solomon's prayer that we read about in 1 Kings chapter 3 and verses 5 through 15. If you will, please read with me, and then I want to analyze these verses and the other verses that are parallel to them just a little bit. Beginning with verse 5, at Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, ask what I shall give you. And Solomon said, you have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David. But I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or to come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may know, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Then God said to him, because you have asked this thing and have not asked for long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you. I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be anyone like you among the kings all your days. So if you walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. Then Solomon awoke, and indeed, it had been a dream. Now, folks, that was quite a dream, don't you agree? If you look at the parallel passage in 2 Chronicles, you find it's not the dream part is just kind of glossed over. It's not mentioned. It's a good thing we have these two parallel passages that can help us to put it all in perspective so that we understand. But I won't take time to read the second account, but it parallels what we've read here. Same question, same answer, and God blesses Solomon. Now, it helps, I think, to understand the circumstances that had come about that led up to this time that the question and the answer are given. Now, David had become old and you might say decrepit. He had become old and he was weak. And his fourth son, now you remember several of his sons died in rebellion against David, including Absalom. And so the succession would come on down to a fourth son, and his name is Adonijah. But he wasn't the one God had chosen. But Adonijah decided, while David is weak and before Solomon can be put on the throne, I'm going to try to take over. And so he tried to rebel and take over the throne from his father David, even before David had died. But David and Bathsheba, mother of Solomon, and Nathan the prophet rallied their resources together and hurriedly had Solomon installed as the new king. So David, the existing king, installed his son Solomon, not necessarily the next one in line, but the king had the right to say who the next one would be. And he installed Solomon, and of course Solomon was God's choice all along. It was then that this question comes up that's so important to our understanding of what has happened here. Now I want to raise a couple of questions. Number one, why was Solomon's answer so important? It was an important question, yes, but Solomon's answer to that question is vital. There are several reasons. There are things happening and things in the background that make this answer so dramatic and so important. Number one, the vastness of the empire that David had built up. David had started out with Saul having a small empire and David the outcast. And as David grows and builds his army and conquers more and more territory, and Saul dies, and then David is put on the throne. The people of the country install David as their king over the whole country. Then he conquers some of his neighbors that were a threat to him. And so David's empire suddenly has become a great, expansive empire. Now, they didn't have cell phones, did they, Robert? They didn't have much of a way of communicating. So you try running a vast empire like this with no resources. So number one, Solomon has a big job ahead of him if everything goes well. And if some of these provinces try to rebel, he's going to be in trouble. Also, think about the huge numbers of people involved now. They're spread out over all these different countries. They speak many different languages. And here is Solomon in a central location. But he's got to try to rule all these different kinds of people and hundreds of thousands of people on top of that. He has powerful enemies. David has subdued the Philistines, but they've been down before. They can rise up again. So there's always that danger. Then south is Egypt, and the Pharaoh and his army is always a threat. And then you've got Assyria forming off in the east. And so all of these really put a lot of pressure on Solomon. Any one of these enemies could erupt and cause him a lot of trouble. Now another thing is the place of worship. You remember when the Ark of the Covenant and the Tabernacle were brought up into the Promised Land by Joshua and then later King Saul. King Saul was a member of the tribe of Benjamin. And the Tabernacle wound up in the city of Gibeon, which was a Benjamite city. And so it's 8 miles from where the temple or where the tabernacle is sitting and where the big brass altar and the laver and all this are sitting. They're way out in Gibeon. You remember David brought in the Ark of the Covenant and Uzziah put his hands out, or Uzzah put his hands out and touched the Ark and died and scared everybody to death. Finally, David regrouped and brought the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. But there wasn't a temple. So where was the Ark of the Covenant sitting? Under a tent in the city of Jerusalem. So some of the people would go and worship before the Ark of the Covenant. Others would go all the way 8 miles out to the city of Gibeon to worship there where the tabernacle, the tent of meeting, was still located. And so that was causing problems and had been for a long time, and threatened to discourage a lot of people. Now, you've still got some of the high places that the Canaanites had built and where they worshiped idols. So you've got another factor that if God's people are disgruntled because of where the temple or where the tabernacle is located and the temple's not built yet, then some of them may lapse into idolatry. So you've got David having gathered all these wonderful things for the temple. He gathered cedar from Lebanon and all kinds of other wood, and he gathered craftsmen and metal workers, and he's got all these things ready to build the temple. But guess what? Everything's just on hold because David wasn't allowed to build the temple. God said, you know, you can't build it. You're a man of blood. So it was going to be up to Solomon to build the temple. But Solomon's just a young boy. He's in his 20s. And we don't know exactly what his age was. I've tried to research it, and I still can't find out. But somewhere in his 20s, in fact, he had, in the course of these verses, we're told that he had gotten married to the princess of the king or the Pharaoh of Egypt. So he's a young man. He's still just in his formative years, and he hadn't started building the temple yet. So his answer, when God asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" His answer is going to be very important in all these different areas. Now, what was God offering Solomon? When you think about it, when God says, "Ask what you will, and it will be granted to you." Now, folks, would you offer that to your son or daughter or granddaughter, grandson, or for my case, my 4-year-old great-granddaughter? "Honey, just whatever you want, tell me, and I'll go get it for you." Now, you're really sticking your neck out. When you send a kid off to college and you sign those papers enrolling that child in college, you're pretty well saying, "Whatever it takes for this child to graduate from college, I'm going to give it." When you marry, when you get married, or when you have a baby, aren't you saying, "Whatever it takes"? Well, here we've got God saying to Solomon, "Whatever you need, just tell me. I'm going to hand it over to you." And what is God offering? If Solomon gets his answer right, Solomon will become one of the greatest kings of all time. But if Solomon gets the answer wrong, he's going to miss out on all these good things he could have had, and no telling what kind of problems he will run into. Solomon could ask anything. That shows that God had a lot of confidence in Solomon himself. Now, I wouldn't hesitate to tell my wife, "Honey, while I'm in India, whatever you need, you just go get it." You know, I wouldn't have any hesitation because I know my wife, and I know she's careful, and she squeezes that dollar till it squeals. So I know she'd be careful. And God must have known that about Solomon. He knew this man's heart, and he knew the kind of things that Solomon would ask, and God more or less gives him a blank check. "Solomon, what do you need? What do you want? Whatever it is, it will be granted to you." Now, he couldn't make an offer like that unless he had a tremendous confidence in Solomon. Now, how did Solomon answer God? Solomon is in a sleep state. He's asleep. And God comes to him. Now, if you go back to Adam, how did Adam communicate with God? We know he couldn't see God face to face and live, and yet he walked in the garden with God every evening. So somehow or other, in a close relationship, in a close way, God communicated with Adam. Now, we're not told exactly how it worked, but somehow or other, they were able to communicate until Adam and Eve sinned and God put them out of the garden. Then you think about Abraham. And God told him, "Through you, I'm going to bless all the nations of the world." But how did he communicate with Abraham? How did he communicate with Noah? How did he communicate with Moses? Now, we do know more about that. Moses is tending sheep on the side of Mount Sinai, and he sees a bush burning. He goes near the bush, and God says, "Take your shoes off. This is holy ground. I'm going to have a meeting with you here." And so Moses is meeting with God, but what does he see? A burning bush. And there's no real explanation of how he interacted with God after that. Well, here's Solomon. And he is asleep, and God comes to him in his sleep state or as he's dreaming. And God says, "Okay, Solomon, tell me what you want. whatever it is, I'll grant it to you. Now, you notice that in the description, 1 Kings 3, that Solomon is under a lot of stress. He wants to live up to the expectations of his father David and of his mother Bathsheba, and he wants to live up to the expectations of all the advisors that are still around from David's administration. He wants to live up to the expectations of the people of the country. He's under a lot of stress. And he's still under his father's shadow. And one thing that may have crossed his mind is, God being so good to me because of my father David, if I don't live up to what God expects, will God dump me? You know, a lot of things going on in his mind. And I wonder, as he laid down to sleep that night, were these things going through his mind? Was he feeling the pressure? And was God coming to him to help relieve that pressure? We don't know. But we do know that God speaks to him. And he says, I'm a little child. I don't know how to go out and come in before this people. Now, was he a little child? He probably, in his 20s, married and raised in the palace of David, the king. He's no little kid by those standards. But when he thinks about the job that is going to fall on his shoulders and already has fallen on his shoulders, he says, I'm just like a little child. I need somebody to guide me and to instruct me so that when I go in and go out and come in front of these people, I'll be doing it the right way. So what he's saying is he needs help from God. He's humble enough that he is willing to admit to himself that he needs help. Men, you ever get lost and your wife is saying, honey, do you know where you're going? Oh, yeah, you know. Because you hate to stop and ask, you know, questions. You hate to stop and, you just feel like, well, it's got to be here somewhere. And our pride kind of gets the best of us sometimes. But this man is so humble. And if you'd been raised in David's household, in a palace, and you knew you were going to be king someday, don't you think there might be a little bit of temptation to be haughty and proud? But the description we have here of Solomon is one of being a humble man who is desiring to have God's wisdom to help him through all these difficult decisions that he's going to have to make. So, how did Solomon answer God? He answered him humbly, and he answered him truthfully, and God gave him more than he asked. Now, how many different ways did God bless Solomon? Solomon said, give me the wisdom I need and the knowledge. Now, notice wisdom and knowledge, not just wisdom, but wisdom and knowledge to guide your people the way they need to go. That was his answer. And so because of his answer, because he had a home run, if you would, he scored a touchdown, he really gave the answer that God wanted him to give. And so God began to bless him. What are some ways that God blessed Solomon? There are many. Number one, God allowed Solomon to build the temple of God in Jerusalem. Now, folks, I've not been to the Holy Lands. I don't think I want to go right now. Do you? But people that have been over there and have brought back pictures, our preacher at Shiloh at Hazel Green, was over there in January of this year. And have you heard of the Wailing Wall there in Jerusalem? You know what that is? That is part of the original structure of the temple built in the days of Solomon, if I understand it right. That huge wall is part of what was the temple complex. And that's why so many Jewish people go there to the Wailing Wall. And they write out their prayers and they slip them into the cracks in the wall between the rocks. So some of what David did is still there today. In fact, archaeologists have found in different places, they have actually found the rocks that were laid in the time of Solomon when he fortified the cities and when he built the places for the chariots and all to be housed. Some of those rocks are still right there where they were put in the days of Solomon. Now, he also built a magnificent palace for himself. And, of course, we don't have any photographs of it, but the descriptions of it are magnificent. Have you ever been to, any of you been to Graceland in Memphis, Elvis's home? I went there, and, of course, the big iron gates. We went in through the big iron gates and went into the house, and I looked around. And I said, well, I've been in houses like this many different places. I wasn't all that shocked, and then I got to thinking, wait a minute. Elvis was there in the 50s, and where I lived in the 50s, we didn't even have running water. We had a pump, and we had to go out and pump water and bring it in and heat it in on a tea kettle. And so I guess it was pretty impressive for the time. And just think about what David, what Solomon must have built after he finished the temple and had all these craftsmen and all these materials. Then he just went right on and built himself a magnificent temple. Then he built a complete system of fortifications where he put horses and chariots and soldiers, and he spread them out in strategic areas all through the kingdom. And as a result of that, there was peace in his kingdom for how many years? Anybody know? How many years was there peace in Solomon's kingdom? 40 years. Now, how many 40-year periods have we had in the history of this country when we didn't have a war of some kind? Not many, I don't think. So, in that day and time, that was marvelous. He did it through strength. He had all these outposts, and if there was a problem or a rebellion somewhere, he could send his armies instantly or just shortly to go over there and put that down. And what neighboring country would try to invade Solomon's kingdom with all this standing army ready to defend his country? So another thing that God blessed him with was being a smart military man or having some good advisors at least. He also formed an alliance with Pharaoh through marriage of his daughter, but that alliance continued as years went by and helped to keep him safe. Solomon wrote a lot of literature. When you read in our Bibles, what books? What books in our Bibles? Ecclesiastes. Song of Songs, Song of Solomon. Proverbs, and a lot of the Proverbs Solomon evidently gathered from other people and probably wrote a lot of them himself. As he would hand down judgments, then somebody would write down those judgments. And so the judgments of Solomon are preserved for us today, or his writings are preserved to us today in the Bible. You have David's Psalms. Don't have anything from Saul, do we, except the stories. And others, you have the prophets that have written books in the Bible. But this is one king, King Solomon, that has three different books. Now, he lectured on natural history. When you read Ecclesiastes and some of his other writings, he describes the animals and the plants and all kinds of things. And historians say that Solomon would give lectures on what we call today natural history. Now, how many kings would take the time to learn all that, much less to give it out to other people? He had mines. In fact, there was a movie called Solomon's Mines. Have y'all ever heard of that? But the description was that one reason Solomon was so wealthy was because he had business ventures. He would send workers out to these mines, and he would invest in getting the ore out of those mines. And it was said that gold and silver was as plentiful on the streets of Jerusalem as stones were because of Solomon, the taxes coming in from outlying districts and the money that was coming in from the mines and the other businesses. Solomon's considered to be the most famous king to ever reign over Israel. I think we'd all agree with that. Like I say, if I was going to make a movie, boy, what better movie to make than Solomon, the story about Solomon. When the Queen of Sheba heard from North Africa about Solomon, don't you know that she thought these rumors can't be true? They're just too fantastic. You know, rumors usually are exaggerated. So she comes up to see Solomon and to learn, see if he's as wise as everybody says he is, see if he's as rich as everybody says he does is. And 1 Kings 10, she makes a trip, and then what does she say about Solomon and his wealth and his wisdom? The half has not been told. It wasn't exaggerated. What she'd heard, even the half of what was true had not circulated in rumors as far as North Africa. Now, later, you'd have kings like the kings of Syria and Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. You'd have the kings of the Persians. You'd have the Greeks and the Romans. But out of all those kings and all those rulers and all those empires, not one of them was a man that was chosen by God and was a godly man who depended upon God for his day-to-day decisions. And so Solomon is unique still in the way God blessed him and the way he continued to serve God at least for most of his life. Now, I think we know that as he got older, the scriptures indicate that he became involved in idolatry through his wives and that he probably lapsed back into some of the sinful ways toward the end of his life. But for most of his life, he's a great example of godliness. Now, how would we answer that same question if God put it to us today? How would you answer that question? Now, now that we're in class together and we're talking about this together, we know what our answer would be. We'd give the same answer as Solomon if we could. But before the class, if you just went out on the street and asked somebody, what answers do you think you would get? I'm afraid most people would be asking for crumbs instead of a birthday cake. You ever have a birthday and they say, well, do you want a cake this year for your birthday? What do you say? Well, of course. Who would want to have a birthday and not have a cake? But when your birthday comes and you're expecting a cake and you get there and all you got is crumbs, you'd be disappointed. Well, Solomon didn't ask for crumbs. He asked for the cake, and God gave it to him, which ought to be an indication to us that we ought to trust in God and ask God for the things that we really know we need, the things that we know are important. If we ask God for those, then he's going to give us the cake, not the crumbs. So many people in the world today, if you ask them, what would you like? Oh, I'd like to win the lottery. How many people win the lottery and keep that money? Most of them go bankrupt. They're worse off than they were when they won the lottery. Somebody would say, well, I want my college team to be undefeated this year. Go Tide, and go Tigers, and go Volunteers, and on and on it goes. But I think we need to aim our sights a little higher than that. I'm glad for the ball teams, and I enjoy them. But is that really the most important thing in our lives? And I love it when they ask the beauty contestants, Miss Kentucky, if you could have anything that your heart desired, what would you ask for? And, the host puts the microphone up to this pretty young lady's lips, and She says, "World peace." Don't you love that? And I agree. We'd all want world peace. Right now, we've got wars going on in a lot of different places. But just to say world peace doesn't really explain very much. Somebody says, "Well, I'd like to live to be 120 years old and in good health." Okay, that sounds good. But somebody says, "Well, I'd like to see my enemies humiliated. I'd just like to see them twisted in the wind. I'd like to see them punished for what they've done to me." Well, I think you're looking at the crumbs. You're missing the cake. Would we ask for fame or wealth or power like a movie star has, you know, wealth and fame and power? If so, we're looking at the crumbs. We're really not seeing that we need the cake that God offers. Now, like Solomon, we've got to depend upon God. What's wrong with our world today? Why can't we go out and set up Bible studies like we used to, home studies? I used to set up as many home studies as I could, as I had time to teach. But it seems like people now don't seem like they need God. They don't need to study the Bible. They don't need to know more about eternal things. And until people realize the need, now there's still a lot of them out there that do realize the need. They're just harder to find. We need to look for them. What does Solomon say in Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6? I'm sure you memorized it years ago. "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding." And he says, "In all your ways acknowledge Him." So we need to be dependent upon God, and we need to recognize that dependence every day. I still can't get over that Jesus, Son of God, was here on earth 33 years or so. And the example that He sets before us is to get up early in the morning and go out and pray. Why does the Son of God need to get up early in the morning and go out and pray? It was part of His need to communicate with God and commune with God. And if He needed it, surely we all need it. Matthew 6:33, Jesus says, "But seek first" what? Not the kingdom of Solomon, but the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. Romans 8 and verse 26, Paul says, "Likewise the Spirit also helps our weaknesses. For we do not know what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit Himself makes intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered." So we need to work with God according to His purpose. James 1 and verse 5 says, "If any of you lacks wisdom," what? "Let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him." Does God ration wisdom and knowledge? No, He gives it to us as in the full, rich way. He gives us everything we need. Well, thank you very much.